Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Cinema Catch-Up Club, the podcast for films that you probably should have seen by now. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Blatt. Thank you very much for downloading this week's episode. And this week, we're back! It's a hiatus! What are we doing putting an episode out? Well, it's Star Wars week, and we have, for every year we've done the programme, done a Star Wars film in Star Wars week, the week of May the 4th, because May the 4th be with you. And we are not stopping that tradition just because I'm having a baby. And by I mean my wife. But yes, so this is pre-recorded about a month in advance, so still no baby news. Sorry if you're hanging out for that and I haven't told you any baby news yet. You're just going to have to wait a little bit longer. But we are watching a Star Wars film, and it is the turn of Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. And as always, we have someone who has seen the film before and someone who has not. Our guest who has not seen the film and back for a second Star Wars adventure, it's Grace Edwards!
Hello!
How are you, Grace?
I'm very excited.
Yes, yeah. It's basically been a whole year since you were on, because your last and I think so far only appearance was Episode 7.
Well, there's a little strike thing in the middle.
That didn't help,
no,
yes.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. did mean a lot of people have not been on for a hot minute. So welcome back.
Thank you.
Star Wars Episode 8.
Yes.
What do you know about this film?
I about as much as I knew about Star Wars Episode 7. So,
okay.
Yes, from memory, I think it was less about plot and more just about people involved. So I believe... Is this the one Rian Johnson directed?
Yes.
Ah.
Yes, that nice. Is correct. So tick, yeah. 1 point.
Good.
Well done.
Something. But this was before Knives Out and...
Yes. This was released in 2017.
Okay,
Knives
yes.
Out, I believe, was 2019.
Yes.
So, yes. Okay, this was lightsabers
two
out for him.
Love it.
Yes. Two things. and you somewhat enjoyed the previous one, the episode 7.
I did.
Name escapes me. I can't remember.
What, the Force Awakens.
Thank you. The Force Awakens.
Yeah. I had a great time.
Mm.
I think I mentioned the last time I was here, I've seen the original trilogy episodes 4 to 6, and I had a nice time watching them all.
Mm-hmm.
I had a nice time watching number 7, so I'm hoping I'll have a nice time watching number 8 as well. But yeah, all I really know is apparently this one is a little bit more controversial.
Mm.
I don't know why. So I'm looking forward to finding out, because I'm not really sure if it's like controversial because there's criticism on like the movie as as a sort of standalone thing, or if it's more, I suppose, polarizing within the fan base itself, and as someone who isn't coming in with strong opinions either way, I be interested to see how it lands.
Indeed. Well, luckily we have someone who has seen this film and therefore almost certainly has a strong opinion one way or the other. It is David Cox.
Hello.
David, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It has been another hot minute since we've had you on. I believe Coda was the last time that we had you on.
Yes.
Which was...
I wasn't even meant to be the guest for that one.
No.
I was the extra fourth person in the room there. Okay. I loved Coda so much, and it's only like post recording that episode that I managed to really like put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could go back in time
and provide a Coda for Coda, yes.
If I could go back in time and give you a new review, it would
go
be 10
then.
Out of 10.
10
like,
out of 10.
Yeah. And I would more like with more certainty and vigor defend it against any critique that was in that recording. And so, plug for a previous episode, and also Coda, truly one of the best films about disability that I've ever seen.
Okay, a retroactive 10 out of 10
yes.
for Coda. Good to know.
You won't be getting a 10 out of 10 for this film.
Wow, that's fair.
However, I will say that I love this film, and unequivocally, it is the best of the sequel trilogy films.
Okay.
Yes.
Interesting.
Just absolutely. Them's fighting words.
Cards on the table.
Yes.
Yes.
So question me away.
Well, my first question would be in a vague, non-spoilery sort of way. How would you describe Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi? What's it about?
So it's a... I would say the interesting thing about it is it's sort of a subversion of expectations and more of a sort of analytical it's more of a interesting sort of exploration of Star Wars as an idea in certain ways, which, you know, you've seen Knives Out, right?
Yes.
it's breaking down the genre and conventions and playing with these tropes and being like, putting it back, being like, hey, look at this, isn't this interesting? Different way of doing this kind of story, which I feel like is brought to Star Wars Episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
Not to as a large extent as with Knives Out does to sort of mystery, murder mysteries, because you won't be able to have too much freedom in the Star Wars franchise as a director, because there's many, many fingers in that pie. But I think that is why people don't like it, is that they came in expecting one thing and they got something else, which I think was very smart and intelligent. And it sucks that a lot of people disagreed, including the producers of Star Wars Episode 9.
yes, it is really interesting, because I feel as though this is the film that sort of set up contemporary Star Wars discourse, in terms of it being quite a divisive and somewhat toxic fan base. Now, that toxicity was already there, but I feel as though the fact that this also followed up Rogue One, which were two films that did stuff that was very different with Star Wars in the movies that we hadn't seen before, did create that thing of division. I personally, I don't think I've seen this film since it was in the cinemas. I quite liked it. I certainly didn't come out going kind of thing. I came out and I went, you know what, my opinion at the time was two-thirds of that film works. There was a third that I felt didn't work, but now it's been a few years, I'm curious to see whether I'm gonna have a different opinion on that when I come back into it. But it's Star Wars, it's lightsabers, it's pew-pew, it's going to be a lot of fun. So with all that being said, shall we watch The Last Jedi?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, for those of you listening at home, pop in those DVDs, load up those streaming services, and prepare to pour yourself a nice big glass of green milk straight from the udder as we watch Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. And welcome back. We've just finished watching Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. And I'm joined once again by my special guest, David Cox.
Hello.
And Grace Edwards.
Hi.
Grace, that was your first time watching Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Mm-hmm. Have to take a run-up with that title. what did you think?
It was interesting. Like, it was, I think, watching Force Awakens, it was like a bit of a... It's like rollicking adventure kind of thing. And there were moments in this one where we got all the action and excitement, but a lot more thinking time and character stuff going on, which, yeah, I think I was interested more often than I was entertained, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
sense?
No, yeah. That makes sense. So more of a film than a ooh film.
Exactly.
Just to break it down to very simple noises. David, when did you last watch this film?
Gosh, it's been a while. I don't know how long ago, but I have rewatched it within my current relationship. So the answer is within the past several years.
That's good. I mean, we do know you have a DVD copy of this, which is... it suggests you may have tested that once at least.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Look, the past few years have not been very good for any of us to really understand the passage of time very well. So.
No, not particularly. That is
have I fair. Watched it three times in the past 4 years? Have I watched it once? I don't know.
How was it coming back this time?
It was still enjoyable. It's good. There are some things that I don't recall, like, or like either did not really care about or just sort of have forgotten about. Namely that Rey is somewhat one-dimensional. She's idealistic and she's like, I've got to do this thing, and it's like all the things around you are sort of trying to prod you and push you in different directions, and she's like, we've got to turn Ben to the light. I'm going to go do this thing. Da-da-da-da-da. And I realized that it's not the most dynamic characterization. Now, the thing is that, I mean, look, there's so much to say about the film.
Yes.
But I really just want to get ahead of, like, there's a lot of toxicity in the Star Wars fandom. And I feel like a lot of the critiques, like, Rey is like a Mary Sue. And I'm like, I don't think she is.
I also don't think she is.
Yeah.
I don't think she quite meets the brilliant criteria for Mary Sue.
But upon reflection, I can see how she could be more interesting as a person.
Yeah. I must say, I haven't watched this since it was out in the cinemas. So that was 6.5 years ago from time of recording. And I don't think I like it as much. That's not to say that I dislike it, but I think this particular viewing did make me go, bits of this really don't work, or bits of this are fine, but not... I guess what it is more, I have more of a clear idea of what I like from Star Wars. And for me, I think it is more of the Episode 7, oh my goodness, this was fun, next kind of thing. But I do really appreciate that this film is interesting throughout. There isn't a point where I'm like looking at my watch going, come on, let's get this moving. Like, there's interesting ideas being explored. But having, come back to it, I don't necessarily know that they quite work, or at least they don't work as well as maybe I thought they did the first time I watched them, is sort of where I'm sitting. It's an interesting film. There's a lot going on in it. There's a lot plot-wise. I do like that it picks up straight away from the end of Episode 7. I think that's just a lot of fun, where it's like, oh yeah, we blew up the third Death Star in however many decades. But the baddies are chasing us now. Right, let's go. Like, that's a great start to a film, to have that. And we see all the old gang back together, and then there's Poe, who's seems a lot more brash in this film. Or I don't know if it's that he's given more opportunities to be brash, but there's a real brashness to his character this time. And that's obviously a theme of this film. And I kind of really didn't like Poe watching the film this time. I don't know how you felt, Grace.
Yeah, I mean, at the start, I did. Yeah, I found him like much harder to like sympathize with. I think he grew on me. Obviously, some teachable moments throughout the film, and I think they did their job. But yeah, that like first sequences, especially, I'm just like, oh, this is actually a bit off-putting. But
in fact, he's so willing to let so many people die to take out a dreadnought. And you know, it's war. There's a cost for every action, but it does seem as though, I don't know, he felt a little imperial in his approach, and that was kind of a thing that maybe that's part of the point of the film. A big point in this film is, oh, these are just two sides of the same thing, and they're both a problem. You know, maybe it's tying into that a little bit, where it's like, yeah, this war and this fight that they're doing is another cycle of this fight from the previous generation, the previous trilogy. See, this is the thing. There's a lot going on in there, because every time you start to explain a thought, you go, oh, but there's something else to this. And I think that's the thing that's really interesting about Last Jedi, is that it's quite layered, more layered than a lot of other Star Wars films, I would say, perhaps, in terms of there's a lot going on under the hood, as it were.
I agree. Grace.
Yes.
So, like, when did you watch Episode 7?
It would be a year ago,
So, it's been a long time since I watched Episode 7, but I remember, like, watching it and there being, like, that strong sense of anticipation of, like, oh, Luke's going to be back, or, like, who are Rey's parents? Like, there's these sort of mysteries that are laid down in Episode 7, and then in 8, it's like, and ta-da, it's nothing. Anyway, I mean, it's not nothing. Like, it is for a narrative and thematic conceptual purpose. But how does it feel as a viewer to have this thing set up only for Rian Johnson to do a quick little switcheroo and be like, this film's different. That's not actually what you're here for.
Yeah, the throwing the lightsaber over the shoulder, all that business.
Yeah. To be honest, so last night I did watch a like summary of like what happened in The Force Awakens, just to like remind myself a bit. And yeah, of the things you were just saying, I think probably the sort of Luke Skywalker's back was the main sort of thing that I was anticipating. I feel like got definitely more of that than in The Force Awakens. And in terms of like Rey's backstory, I don't think I felt disappointed by it. I wasn't, I guess, holding out as much to that particular plot point as some of the others. So it's sort of passed, and I was like, oh, okay, well, fine. But yeah, I guess, and I feel like I'm coming to these films, I just, because I didn't grow up with them. I think I saw A New Hope for the first time in my late 20s, and it's not because I've had any sort of objection to watching them, or it's just that, yeah, they were just never a thing in my house. There's no one in my family who's like a particular fan and makes everyone else watch them. And I guess also just genre wise they're not the sort of thing that I would watch by myself, so I sort of have to be with someone who's going to sit me down and be like, yeah, watch. And I think that just means that I'm not coming from like an emotional investment place. So I think watching the plot of this one unfold in all its layers more, I think I felt more emotionally detached in this one than in Force Awakens. But yeah, I feel like we're just going to be using the word, oh, that's like interesting a lot in this.
It's going to do a lot of heavy lifting. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like every interesting thing is one of those rocks that Rey lifts at the end, and we just float them above our heads, hoping they don't crush us while we continue to talk about it. And I think it is just because it was such a different way of having a Star Wars film. Obviously the three that were in the original trilogy, they were relatively distinct between the three films, but there was sort of a general flavor of late 70s, early 80s, the technology at the time, the way that those films were made, sort of all feel of a piece, in the same way that the prequel trilogy with Lucas's direction of that and the green screens and obviously all of that technology feels like it's very much of its time. I don't know if we're far enough removed from the sequel trilogy or not to have that feeling yet, because it was 2015 to 2019 for those three films. I didn't watch this and go, oh my goodness, remember when we used to do that in the 2010s as a film thing? They do feel as though they don't feel old. They still feel quite contemporary, and even contemporary to Star Wars media that has come out since then, primarily the television stuff on Disney Plus. But it is just really difficult to watch this film and kind of know whether it worked simply because what it was doing was so radically different. What it was doing was trying to kind of disassemble the idea of the light side and the dark side. All of Star Wars before that had been, there isn't really a grey. And by that I mean in the films. Obviously there's a lot of extended universe stuff where people are like, the grey Jedi, Steven, you're not even talking about them. Like that kind of
actually
thing. Yes, a lot of actuallys. But in terms of what we've seen in the films, it's largely been a good versus evil, a binary thing. And I think that this film has a really good crack at going, yeah, but there's more to it. But I don't think this is a very entertaining film. I think having come back to this now and watched it, I think for me, there's some really amazing set pieces. There's some long sections in between each set piece where it's like, okay, this is interesting, but I don't know that I'm actively being entertained. And I think for a film that is a Star Wars film, that is actually a problem in some respects, because I think the audience expectation is woohoo, big rollicking adventure, let's blow this thing and go home. Yeah, I don't know. How do you feel, David?
Yeah, I think that's the part of the division around this film is that there is that like expectation of like, yeah, we're going to have like a fun little rollicking adventure where we're going to go and have like our plucky heroes blow this up or blow this up and whatnot. It was an interesting choice to decide to try and deconstruct a lot of things to do with Star Wars. Like, you know, the whole idea of Poe, you know, just you just need to have your charm, charisma, and just plow through the obstacle kind of thing. Like, you know, he's the Han of the new series. His charm and wit is not what gets him through. You know, he needs to actually stop and think for a moment and consider a different tactic. You know, and then also that expectation of like, it's going to be Luke. And then Luke is just like, I'm sad and I don't want to be here. The thing is that like the thing that annoys everyone else is the thing that makes me really like it, because it's like, it is subverting all your expectations in a way that is not really Star Wars, but is Star Wars, because it is, you know, it is Star Wars. It's sort of like putting a little mirror on it and be like, hey, everyone, look, this is what the back of the haircut looks like. You're like, I don't want to see the back of the haircut. Yeah. I just want to see the front.
Yeah, I'm all and bangs. Show me the bangs.
Bang, bang, bang. Yeah, and I was just like, Star Wars Episode 7 was such a nostalgia fest. Like, you have your plucky orphan hero from the desert world. But this one's Jakku instead of Tatooine. And you've got your Death Star. Only it's bigger now. Like, you know, and you've got your
Han Solo. Yeah, literally the same guy.
You literally got Han Solo, you know, like, oh, you know, and then there's C-3PO and there's these nostalgic elements and these familiar things. It's like welcoming like the community and the fans back to like, this is the world. Yeah, we're back, right? And it's the same people again.
Yes, even the plot, like, just from like Force Awakens and New Hope, it like was all the all the beats were there.
And then Star Wars Episode 8 is like, but what if it wasn't just the same thing over and over again? What if we stopped for a moment to reflect on how sad the life of Luke is?
And like, what we discovered is everyone went, boo, we hate that.
No, it's kind of ridiculous, because like, it's about mythology, really. It's about how we create these idols. And like, we even see it on a small scale with like Finn and Rose. She's like, you're the Finn. And it's like, it's been like such a small amount of time, and already like these legends and ideas of who people should be are growing. And when you're brought into contrast with the reality of that, it becomes very sort of disappointing, which we see with Rose, and also, you know, 500,000 Star Wars fans.
And this is the thing that I really like about The Last Jedi, and just about the mindset of this sort of production in general, was that they went, yeah, let's do something different. Let's get in Rian Johnson and just, yeah, let's have a Star Wars film that deconstructs that. And let's allow him and the creative team to come in and add things that we haven't seen before. One of the things that I really liked, both the previous time I watched it and this time, was the Force connection between Kylo Ren and Rey and their conversations that were happening, even though it was set up by Snoke, because it's an evil plan. Sorry, that's the Emperor voice. That wasn't him. But it was very much a... It was this sort of setup, which was a pretty clever setup as well, to sort of catch them both out using their inexperience to Snoke's advantage. But I just like the way it was shot, and I like the way that they're having these interactions and things like the seawater splashes Kylo and he's a bit wet afterwards, even though they're, you know, half a galaxy apart. And I just thought aspects like that were really cool. I thought there was some really good stuff in there. It just doesn't all mesh. I think maybe that's the problem. Like, when I first watched it, and I said this before we watched it, I said I liked 2/3 of this film. The third that I didn't like when I watched it originally was the Canto Bight casino sequence. Partly because it felt, to me, it felt a little bit sort of slightly drama deflating, that you've got this intense chase where the Resistance are trying to keep out of the range of the First Order, but then two of our crew can just go off on a little side quest adventure kind of thing. Like, it felt like that removed some of the tension of that sequence, which I was quite invested in. I really liked that, and I really liked the Kylo Rey sort of relationship when I first watched it. But Canto Bight, which is important for what they're trying to do, but it just felt a little bit misjudged for me. I don't know if that's how either of you felt with Canto Bight watching it this time round.
Well, yeah, watching the first time, but possibly. Yeah, because I think a lot of, like the plot lines that you mentioned, like the Kylo Ren plot line, or as you were saying, David, like all the sort of legend themes and like folklore references, that's stuff that I like typically do get really invested in and get really interested in. And like probably more so than the sort of rollicking adventure stuff, which I do also enjoy, but for very different reasons. And it's a very different sort of mindset or headspace that I'm in when I'm watching and getting progressively more invested in either of those things. So yeah, having them both kind of playing out, but I guess to slightly different extents was, yeah, I think possibly a bit jarring, and probably meant that I wasn't able to fully like be as sold on either one as if it would be. But then I don't think you could have or should have removed either of them completely. So I'm not quite sure if there's a way to have both, but
The my issue with the film is not specifically Canto Bight, like as his little side adventure, but like you said, it does sort of take away the sort of dramatic tension. If you're like, well, if two people could like escape off to the side, and we see later that like, you know, the smaller transports don't manage to sneak away as successfully as we'd hoped, but like the issue with the film was very much like the constraint of the scenario that they've written, which is very much a time constraint issue of, well, you know, sure, Rey has to go through and have this whole adventure where she's struggling with Luke's being sad mode, and also like instill some sort of like twist in his attitude to his worldview, but also learn herself some sort of usable skill, and then also return to this thing, all within like the space of unclear amount of time, probably maximum of 2 days, a day and a half or something. Like,
it's not long.
At one point they're like, we have 18 hours left to fuel, and they're like, we're halfway through the film. So like the constraint, the scenario that the writers put on themselves to create this like framework in which all this adventure happens, sort of just, it's not conducive really to all the things that they want to achieve.
And maybe, even though I really love the chase element, maybe not having the chase beginning at the very start of the film, maybe that would have allowed them to have everything set up a bit more. You could have the rebels sort of going, okay, we know that the First Order are going to be on us soon, so we're going to need some reconnaissance or something. And maybe that's where you get maybe Finn and Rose and possibly even Poe going off on the mission together that turns into the Canto Bight sequence. And then you could have, or maybe even, you know, they're going off to do that, and then the Resistance are attempting to do something else with their ships, but they get caught maybe like 20, 30 minutes into the film. And you can still have that sequence, but without the weird division thing. And maybe then that also allows you to set up Rey and Luke having that bit of time together without it feeling like they hung out for like a day and a half and then she abandoned him kind of thing. Like, it is interesting, but at the same time, it's still fun. That's the thing. Like, it's still a film that I'm watching, and at no point am I... Spoilers for next year. I did not like Rise of Skywalker anywhere near as much. Like,
that's good and right. Yeah. Everyone should hate
You're
that.
Really selling it to
Look.
You will have a bad time.
if you really want to come and watch it, I would absolutely love you to come and watch it in 12 months. But it is probably the one I'm the least looking forward to in some respects. But that's partly because it's just, from a filmmaking perspective, it took a real adverse turn to everything that was set up in this film, and sort of went, oh, this created discourse amongst people on the internet and the fan base that really didn't like it. Let's load up episode 9 with just almost like overdosing on nostalgia to an extent, or, you know, doing that rollicking action, but times two, basically. Mm-hmm. And that film doesn't feel like it has any space to breathe at all, whereas this film has maybe too much time, too much space to breathe. Mm-hmm. And it was such a shame, because there is some really interesting through line through the three films. There's some interesting ideas. The idea that Ray's parents aren't special, and that she doesn't have some big lineage, because obviously when this film is coming out, we're all going like, oh my god, is she a Kenobi? Is she like a lost Skywalker? Or is she like, is she, you know, related to, I don't know, Qui-Gon Jinn somehow, or something like that? Plo Koon, maybe? I know he's not human, but, you know, this kind of thing. It's
enough generations and you won't see the spines.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So, you know, it was one of those things where everyone's like, oh, and I really quite like this film. Went, yeah, your parents weren't shit. Your parents weren't anybody. And, it, you know, it's kind of like a moving away from that Chosen One stuff that was a big part of the original trilogy with the Skywalker family.
That's... Yeah, yeah. Well, part of the reason why I love it as a film is, like, in a very, like, multi-layered way, it is sort of rejecting that old narrative of, like, you know, effectively, the eugenics of fantasy. like, let's be honest, the Chosen One is in a bloodline and therefore is pure and magical and has, you know, like, Luke is more special because he's the son of Vader, who is the most powerful Jedi in the galaxy. And then it's like, well, obviously she has to be someone special. She has to be descended from someone special, because that's the sort of eugenic idea that we have in our minds for fantasy, and it's only okay in fantasy.
Yeah, maybe she's special just because of who she is rather than her genetics. That's the thing. And I really like that this film does that.
Yeah, and the very end with, like, the little boy who, like, comes from nothing in the stables, just, like, has force powers, and it's like he's posing with the broom like it's
I'll get my own trilogy.
Pretty much. Like we've had six films that centered all around the drama of two men who are father and son, and that has caused, like, decades of turmoil across the entire galaxy, and it's this big mythic thing. And, you know, nerd boys are a bit toxic about who gets to be in the fandom. And it's like, no. Like, Star Wars is not just your nostalgia fest. This is you had nostalgia and fun as a child. There are new children now. Let the new children have fun. Let's build new stories. Let's build new heroes. And then Star Wars Episode 9 was like, actually, I think that's a load of shit. And no, it's bad that you did that. And so Star Wars Episode 8 is such a great Star Wars film, ruined by the fact that it is part of a trilogy that it does not belong in.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
And I do think ultimately that is one of the big problems with this trilogy of films, is none of the three films really feel like there was a clear plan. I think there was a clear plan with Episode 7, which was make Episode 4 and see if it works, because there was such pressure. There was so much pressure on that film, though. Like, thinking back to 2015 and the fact that you'd had the prequel trilogy, which was such a disaster in terms of not being great films, but a lot of good stuff came from it in terms of the TV shows and things subsequent. But that film coming out, and everyone's like, okay, you're making a sequel to Star Wars. Woof, good luck, because we... And it came out, and everyone kind of went, oh, that was fun. And it was like, great, we've done it. And then the fact that Episodes 8 and 9, the fact they took that pivot away from what Episode 9 looked like being when they originally had Colin Trevorrow as the directing head, and, like, the story for Episode 9 was going to go a very different way than what it ended up going. And a lot of those reactionary changes came from the result of this film, basically, came from the feedback from audiences from this film and the internet discourse. And that's a real shame, because what we end up with is just three different Star Wars films that are only sort of connected because they have the numbers 7, 8, and 9 on them.
Pretty much. Yeah. Another critique for, like, Star Wars Episode 8 is that at the end of the film, really, the only, like, we've got Rey, Finn, and Poe as our three main protagonists. And by the end of the film, they're not really closer together as friends, have not really learned anything together, except for, like, Finn and Poe kind of hang out a little bit, but then Finn gets, like, redirected with Rose. We're introducing a new character. I'm sure she'll be super important at number 9. Don't worry about it. And yeah, it as a single standalone film with it would be good, but it's not, because it is not a standalone film, and therefore it doesn't set up Nine in any way, and therefore in a sort of weird retrospect way, it's like watching someone half do a project and be like, this has good potential, you know, something I heard a lot as a child with unmedicated ADHD is, you have so much potential. And I'm like,
but no,
thank you. And they're like, what are you going to do with that? I'm like, I don't know. And then neither did Kathleen Kennedy or anyone else on the creative team.
No, it was kind of, I completely didn't clock until Ray and Poe introduced themselves at the end. I was like, oh yeah, that's right. You guys actually haven't.
Yeah.
That's a big problem. Like, if Han and Luke hadn't met until the end of Empire Strikes Back, which admittedly, one of them's in carbonite, that's going to be difficult. Like, can you imagine if it was like, oh, we have to rescue Han, and Luke's like, oh, who's that? Oh, he's this guy I've heard about. But like, sure, I guess. Let me just get my robot hand, and yeah, we'll give it a go, I guess. Hi, I'm Han. You know, they'd be on Jabba's sail barge, would be the first time they meet. You know, that would be weird. And it does feel weird that we just never had that. Up until it almost feels like that scene was added in just because they went, they need to meet at some point in the film. Our trio needs to meet because it's weird that they haven't, kind of thing. And that's partly, you know, the fault of Seven as well, the fact that they didn't meet or didn't have that crossover. And I honestly can't remember how much they interact in Nine. They do interact more than just introducing each other. They have like at least scenes together. But I don't. Nine did not live long in the memory, which is why I'm struggling to remember exactly what their interactions were like. So maybe not.
Oh my god! I'm just remembering, and I won't spoil it to you. Yeah. But near the beginning, Poe has his facial expression as he delivers some just terrible line of exposition, and you can see the pain in Oscar Isaac's eyes. It's just like. Somehow,
oh, that line, yeah.
This thing happened, and you're like, oh, yeah, I feel it too.
Yeah, he's like, I can't. Really, I have to say that. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's.
But it opens with some fun adventures, and they're doing which is what people want.
Yeah.
They don't want us to sort of look into the psychological horrors of having to be Luke after the end of, you know, another failed experiment, which. People got really annoyed at that. Like, Luke wouldn't do that because he's so cool. And it's just like, his two biggest mentors in his life were Obi-Wan Kenobi, who failed to stop his apprentice from doing something shit. And so exiled himself to the desert to be sad and literally change his name and change who he was and reject his previous self. And also Yoda, who failed to kill the Emperor in one fight and then went, I'm going to exile myself to a swamp planet and I'm gonna get a little bit kooky in the head and I'm just kind of gonna, like, walk around with my stick poking things.
Luke is being very consistent to the Jedi tradition,
but as an audience we weren't watching episode 4, 5, and 6 with that idea that Yoda is meant to be this grand mythic hero that we've spent the past several decades aggrandizing and building up in our heads. And then it's like, no, this is the reality of what happens, is that sometimes you fail and you get sad, and he's literally doing what his mentors did beforehand, but we didn't have a sort of sad aside where Obi-Wan Kenobi sort of just drools in his beard with the sort of horrors of age.
Not until the Obi-Wan series on Disney Plus, and even then.
That was bad.
I quite liked it.
Or, you know, Yoda just like sort of been like, PTSD have I?
Yeah.
Like it's just a...
Surely SDPT in his case.
It's just a sort of, you know, a brutal and realistic look at actually expanding on the ideas that you're familiar with in 4, 5, 6, but being like, no, I wanted the explosions instead. It's like, no, the horrors of war.
No, but again, that's, oh god, it's interesting.
Yes, it really would have been a great Disney Plus show. It's like an aside, different.
In all honesty, with more than 2.5 hours, I think there's some ideas here that could have been really explored in maybe like a 5-hour thing, which a Disney Plus 6-part show probably would be, that kind of thing. So One thing I will say that we have to touch on is obviously Carrie Fisher. This was the last film that she did before she passed away. This film actually came out a year after she passed away.
I believe she was one of the great deaths of 2016.
Yeah, she was the big last one in 2016.
Oh, yeah.
Just after George Michael. Unless, of course, you count her mum as well, which a lot of people do. Yes. Debbie Reynolds. So, yeah, sorry, Debbie Reynolds was the last of the great 2016. They're a package deal, though. I kind of say it. That's the saddest package deal in the world.
That was so sad.
It was so, that was a rough week. Yeah. That was a, yeah, Christmas as well. It was bad. But, yes, so Carrie Fisher had filmed everything and then passed away, and the film came out almost 12 months later. And Leia obviously has a really important role in this film, you know, keeping things together, but she's out of action for a large part of the film because she gets blown into space and then Mary Poppins herself back into the ship, which is like both a really cool thing to do, going, oh my goodness, she's a super powerful Jedi, but also a thing where you go, I don't know if I completely buy that in my space wizard film, which I know is a silly thing to say, but it was one of those things where it was interesting, I guess, is maybe the best way to put it. It was a really cool sequence, but a little bit of me did go, after watching the film, were they ever tempted to maybe just have that canonically be that character's end? To have her be killed in that way? And potentially they would have to have reshot all the rest of the scenes that involved her around that to make it work. But I almost feel as though like having her killed in that way could have been really impactful and could have been really interesting in terms of, yeah, she got taken out by like a random TIE fighter after her son chose not to attack her, and like the idea of that helping him break down this whole idea of no, the good and the bad have to die. It was, yeah, it was interesting, but it was also but I also get not changing and wanting to honor the work that was done as well, because she had so much more in the film that followed that. But she's very good.
Yeah. I don't feel like, you know, oh no, the actor's dead, the character dies too. Like, that just feels like sometimes that just happens.
It's it
like,
does. Yeah.
In this one, they thankfully had the room to not have that happen.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh my goodness, watching that in cinemas and being like, Carrie Fisher has just relatively recently died, and it's a much more like emotionally hard hitting scene, where for that moment she's like floating, seemingly dead, and you're like, oh, Carrie Fisher's dead in real life too. And then, oops, subvert expectations. That's right. She is the brother of Luke Skywalker. Sister of Luke Skywalker. The bloodline means that they're just very strong magical beings.
Oh no, I mean, ultimately it's way better having her actually getting to show like force powers that are really cool on screen. I like getting one that is uniquely for that character, because like we don't see anybody else do that in any other Star Wars that I'm aware of. I've not seen any other Jedis being like, I can preserve myself in space.
No.
Yeah, so that was cool. But yeah, when that happened in the moment, I went, oh my god, they killed her off, like, was that a change kind of thing? And then of course she isn't dead. It was just really sad that she wasn't around for that last film, which was meant to be the film that was focused around her character, because episode 7 is focused around Han for obvious reasons. He's not in episode 8, and episode 8 was the Luke film where he did his mentoring, and apparently the original plan for episode 9 was General Leia, the mentor that would finish off the mentoring of Rey and Poe and Finn. And of course, she died. So they had to rip that up as well, which was just a real shame.
Some elements of 9 I can now see would make so much more sense if Leia was a leading character in it. But that's for next year. Dun dun dun.
Okay, before we move on to trivia,
do not invite me back.
You really don't want to do 9?
I really don't want to do 9.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
We don't need to hear me talk too much more about Star Wars.
That's fair, but I will ask you for a little bit more Star Wars chat.
Okay.
I would like to know, what was like a moment or a sequence from this film that really stood out to you? Because I do think this is a film which has some very striking moments and sequences that are very unique compared to the other films. Was there a particular one that jumped out as you as being like, oh, that was really cool?
I mean, Krait is such a gorgeous planet. Like, it's salt, but if you play with it, like, it turns
red.
That
was just visually red. Stunning.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like the idea of blood without blood. Haha, it's not an R-rated film. Mm. We have not just, like, lit... Like, it is sort of visual and aesthetic as well as, like, symbolic and really good. And also the hyperdrive scene, the sort of self-sacrifice of just... Mm. Pointing the ship like a bullet.
Holdo doing the Holdo maneuver.
Yeah.
As we all learned very quickly what the maneuver was.
Yeah.
Stunning. First time viewer for Grace, anything that jumps out?
Yeah. I just really enjoyed the kind of Kylo Ray Snoke kind of showdown sequence. I was like, some parts of it I feel like I kind of saw coming, other parts I didn't. So it was, and again, just visually as well, just like the red and black, just the whole screen. It was just, that was definitely one of the points where I think I was like interested and like emotionally invested.
I think of the three sequel films, Last Jedi is the one that is probably the best visually in terms of its use of not just the fact it's got amazing graphics and all of this kind of stuff, you know, because all three films have that, but the creation of that imagery, like the fight in the throne room with all the I believe they're still Praetorian guards in red with all their weapons that are a bit electrified, and then the backdrop sets on fire and you're like, oh, it was just a giant green screen but red, oh my goodness, that's so cool. Like, yeah, there was a lot of really great design aspects to that. One thing I will say, just on the Holdo maneuver, is when we saw it in cinema, obviously that silence after she jumps to light speed, sacrificing herself and taking out half of the First Order fleet, that silence is, if it can be, louder in a cinema, obviously. And it's quite a long time that sound drops out before you get the pudding sound effect. There was a kid, must have been about 10 or 11, who was in the audience who just couldn't hold it in. And just after a few seconds just went, that's cool. and obviously the whole cinema laughed, but we all agreed that was one of the coolest things that we'd seen. And that's why I can't really say that The Last Jedi is a bad Star Wars film, because it did the Star Wars thing of making you go, that's cool. I really like this. There's bits that it really attached on. I just think it's very clunky. You know, for every that's cool moment, there's Benicio del Toro and his stutter. Like, you know, it's like, that was just such an odd choice.
What's the name of the pig?
The pig?
The Looney Tunes pig.
Oh, Porky Pig.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Speaking as a speech pathologist as well. just the choice of stutter was... That's not how adults stutter.
So, well, as a speech pathologist, if we can just delve a little bit into your professional background, what does the way that he stuttered as that character, what does that indicate? Like, for example, is that the sort of stutter that you would encounter in the world?
It's probably not the most typical kind of stutter that you would expect from, like, assuming that it was a developmental stutter, it's someone who's... started since they were a child and into adulthood, which is like about 90% of stutters, I think, off the top of my head. What he was doing a lot with called like part word repetition, so like a no kind of thing. But what struck me as odd was this: it seemed there was a lack of tension in the stutter, like, and what we would normally expect to see in adult stutterers is you would still sometimes get part word repetitions, but it would be accompanied more by things like like blocks or prolongations. So instead of being like a no, it'd be more like a no.
Right.
Yeah. So as a child, like when it was first emerging, you might expect to see whole word repetitions or even whole phrase repetitions. We'd be like no, and it's sort of like as you, well, I guess as you try to suppress it over and over, and becomes more ingrained and entrenched, you're likely to sort of, yeah, transition from those whole and part word repetitions into it's more of that trying to suppress the stutter, but then, making it into something else.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I'm not an expert in stutters. I don't know too many people I speak to on a day-to-day basis that have a stutter. But when I watched that for the first time, I did go, that just feels like an affectation. They didn't feel genuine.
Yeah. No, I was like, is he putting that on? Is it like a choice? Is it meant to disarm people? I don't know.
Yeah.
As much as I'm a speech pathologist, I actually don't see stuttering clients. Right. We all have to do stuttering as part of our training. I did a placement at a stuttering clinic, but that was all 2-3 years ago now. Okay. So, yeah.
Well, it's more training than I presume David has, and certainly more than me.
Oh, yeah. I've no comment on this one.
No.
No comment.
I know nothing.
Mm. Excellent. Right. Well, with all that being said, would you guys like some trivia about Star Wars Episode VIII, The Last Jedi?
No. Oh,
go on.
I think we can outvote him on this one. No, okay.
Okay, all of this trivia comes from IMDb, so if it's not true, don't blame me. And one of the most commonly cited bits of trivia about this film is the fact that after reading the script for the first time, Mark Hamill said to the writer-director, Rian Johnson, quote, "I pretty much fundamentally disagree with every choice you made for this character. Now, having said that, I've gotten off my chest and my job now is to take what you created and do my best to realise your vision," end quote. He was surprised at the changes that Johnson had made to Luke. So in order to get into the mindset of an old and weary Luke, Hamill wrote a personal backstory for the character to try and set up, because he didn't think that Luke would become this world-weary character. But he was a professional and he went through with it anyway and like helped realize that vision. And I think he does a pretty good job. We don't often come to Star Wars for like fantastic acting performance work that, you know, we don't see many like acting nominations for Star Wars films, but he does a really good job of that world weary, tired mentor. At least for me, he does. I'm not sure about you, David.
Yes.
With the passing of Kenny Baker, who also passed away in 2016, Anthony Daniels was the only remaining actor to appear in all of the Star Wars films, who plays C-3PO.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, that was Chewbacca who died, right?
Peter Mayhew died.
Oh,
I think he might have been the following year, but I also... He didn't appear in the suit in this one because his joints were too bad. He had really bad arthritis or joint pain. So he was in Force Awakens in some scenes, but for anything where there was a lot of movement, it was the new guy, whose name I've forgotten now, but there is a new Chewbacca performer. Whereas R2-D2, they figured out how to do that with robotics and puppetry and not just put a very small person in that tin can as they originally did in the 70s. But yes, Anthony Daniels, the only one that I think appears in all 9 of the films. Because C-3PO is a surprisingly big role in the next film. I've just remembered that now. I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh. Please, you're causing me psychic damage every time I remember any detail about number 9. Carry on. Sorry.
Okay. Well, the 3 resistance fighters who pop up from the trenches on Crate are all Mark Hamill's children.
Oh.
Which is, you know, if your dad's Luke Skywalker...
So Nepo babies, basically.
Yes, they're Nepo trench soldiers. A Nepo baby is undoubtedly going to be a Star Wars character name at some point. Design, Nepo Baby. Oh, my goodness. There was a lot of discussion about how Captain Phasma... Remember Captain Phasma? That character that was such a big part of the 2 films? The Silver Stormtrooper.
Yeah.
There was a lot of discussion about what Captain Phasma's face should look like under her helmet. It was Daisy Ridley who supposedly suggested that it should be her eye that appears unscarred and human. I'm a little concerned that it's Daisy Ridley who seems to be in charge of some of the production elements.
I thought that was a good choice.
I also thought it was a good choice. Not saying it was wrong that Daisy thought that, but I'm just a little concerned if it's Daisy's in charge of all of that.
Yeah, because it's, you know, evil is human, basically. But also, written and directed in the context of I believe Rian Johnson's a somewhat progressive American, and given like the turmoils in America, and how do I say this without violating the Parliamentary Services Department guidelines about neutrality? Hey. Look, basically, yeah, just having Finn, an African American actor, getting to beat down a blonde, blue-eyed individual. A stormtrooper, not a subtle metaphor. I really, really do wonder how people came to the sequel trilogy and went, why is it political? And you're like, you know, it's a good little, like, he's just, look, there's lots of sort of little commentaries here about not just Star Wars, but everything, really. Just, and that one is just like a little, hey, you white supremacist scum. I get to beat you down and have some hope that you know, things change. Yeah. Yay.
No, absolutely.
No more of villains looking horribly scarred for no reason.
Oh yeah, the James Bond problem. Yes, where it's kind of like, oh, there's a slight facial feature. That means you're evil.
Snoke is really messed up. Clearly, that's the result of being evil. Mm. Vader is messed up, clearly a result of being evil. Disability, less of that. Sometimes evil is a tall blonde lady.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes.
When filming, Laura Dern, who played Admiral Holdo, said pew every time she shot her blaster.
Relatable, yeah.
Although not audible, one such instance did make it into the final film. It can be noticed in a close-up shot when Holdo is using the stun gun. Around about an hour and a half into the film, she goes, just makes the little pew noise while she shoots, which is absolutely fantastic. Daisy Ridley took her father to the set in Ireland where they were filming the ending scene for The Force Awakens, and then of course all the scenes in this film, The Last Jedi. When her father met Mark Hamill, he reportedly asked him, so who do you play then? Ridley was not sure if her father was joking or not. And this piece of trivia doesn't say. So I'm kind of hoping that Mr. Ridley has no idea who Mark Hamill is, because that could be quite fun. Rian Johnson's original cut of the film exceeded 3 hours. So this film's 2.5 hours, including credits. He cut between 45 and 60 minutes of the film to get it down to a more palatable runtime. Several of the deleted scenes can be seen on the Blu-ray, and I presume the DVD edition that you have as well, David. Most of them alternate or extended versions of scenes that remained in the film. A scene that was completely omitted is one where Rey notices a ship docking near the village of the caretakers to Arcto. Luke tells her that it's a party of marauders that raid the place once a month. He urges her not to intervene, explaining it's part of the balance between good and bad that the Jedi are supposed to respect. Rey ignores him and goes to their rescue, only to find that the marauders are a different tribe that have simply come to party. Luke admits that he wanted to test her, as he believes that the galaxy is in more urgent need of Rey's willingness to take action than the Jedi of keeping balance. We're all sitting here going, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are more effective ways to do the commentary that he wants.
Mm. And I'm quite glad that scene was cut. That does. During filming, John Boyega was in a strict workout and diet regime. Probably for that scene where he wears that big suit with all the water shooting out of it. He wanted to look real good. But one day when he was hungry, he went to Carrie Fisher's trailer. When he told her that he was sick of eating healthy, she offered him chocolate bars and candy that she'd stashed in her fridge. Since then, he occasionally went to her trailer whenever he wanted a cheat day from his diet. He later said, I failed my diet because Carrie Fisher told me to, and I feel great. So, yes, some wonderful stuff. And finally, Kelly Marie Tran, who played Rose, did not tell anyone that she was doing this film and lied that she was working on an indie film in Canada. At one point, she had to get maple syrup to bring back to her parents so they would believe that she had been in Canada when she'd been doing this indie film. And I think it was partly because, you know, it's a Star Wars film. It's a big deal. And of course, unfortunately for her, it was a lot of backlash for this film, particularly for her character and for her as an Asian American actor, to the point where she was basically bullied off social media. She was a very prominent person on social media. She had a very active following, and she ended up pulling right back from that because she was bullied and vilified a lot, which is a less fun way of ending that point of trivia. But I think it's really interesting that, yeah, as a performer, she went, I really don't want to share that I'm doing a Star Wars film with anyone. Whether as a fun surprise or because of fear of backlash.
That was going.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know. I just like, I mean, like, didn't know that, but I'm kind of like, I'm just like, that's not surprising.
No.
Which is,
it's very sad. What I would say, though, is the question I want to jump onto right after I hear what David says, though.
Oh, I was just saying, and that's why Rian Johnson had to ruin Star Wars for all these toxic nerd bros by saying it's not for you anymore.
Yeah, so we could all learn that there was a problem.
We did it. Rian Johnson is the one who finally taught us that there is toxicity and racism in many online spaces and fandoms. I'm shocked too to learn this.
And thank goodness we solved that problem.
We solved
2017.
It. Yeah. Well, no, because we had to wait for Star Wars Episode 9.
Oh, of course.
For the one shot where there is two lesbians holding hands or kissing or something in celebration, and it's really good and progressive of Disney to put in those three frames that could be edited out for the Chinese market. We did it, everyone.
We did it.
Solved it.
We took a stand against discrimination.
Yeah.
That doesn't contravene party political stuff at all, does it, David?
I stand by that one.
That's fair. You know, and I'm proud of you for doing that. What I would like to ask then, before we finish then, is, hey, guess what? You've just been cast in the next Star Wars film. They're making Star Wars Episode 10, and you've been cast in a Rose equivalent role, where you are going to have scenes. You're not the main character, but you are going to have scenes and a significant role in the film. The question is, are you able to keep that a secret? Or would you even try? David Cox, Grace Edwards, you have been cast. Yeah, let's say you're both cast in Episode 10. Is there anyone that you would have to tell before the film came out?
Oh, I mean, my wife.
Are you sure? You don't have to tell her.
I will.
You could say it's an indie film in Canada, and I'll send you maple syrup. Like, you know.
No, I think it would be great because then she could, because she's a big Star Wars fan, and could have so much joy and fun, and then also share in the frustration and the experience of not being able to tell anyone. Because she can be like, and I'd be like, I also feel that, but now I get to share it with you.
Okay, so you tell your wife.
Yes, I'd tell my wife.
Anybody else?
Maybe.
Maybe?
Maybe one or two people.
Yeah.
It depends.
Would you tell someone who has a film-based podcast who might easily let it slip out? Because I need to know this just for the future.
No.
That's fair. I would also not tell me.
My agent has not done his due diligence in getting me into the Star Wars universe.
No.
Though congratulations to Abigail Thorne from Philosophy Tube, a much better known YouTuber and an actor who is in the upcoming series The Acolyte.
Yes, I saw.
I have no connection to this person whatsoever. Anyway, like a weird little side plug of just like, sometimes people that you heard of get into Star Wars.
They do.
Yeah.
Grace, would you tell your significant other?
I think I would have to because I think he would be more excited than I would be. I'll probably be a bit bewildered and he would be very into it. And I don't know. I feel like once I told one person, I would be terrible at trying to keep it from anyone else.
I mean,
based on, I'm just thinking about like some, not just like some productions and things that I've been involved in, sometimes maybe not wanted my entire extended family to know that I'm involved in that, and somehow they find out.
I mean, I suppose because Star Wars, as you established, is not like a big part of like your upbringing or your family's sort of interest. Do you think it might perhaps be a little easier? Is it something that you're not as connected with? You can be like, oh yeah, it's just another it's a big deal, but it's another project.
No, I think like as much as my family isn't a Star Wars family, I think they do still exist in the world and on social media and on like it's something that they are aware of and are aware that, you know, would be a very, very, very big deal.
Okay, but you'd be locking it down to just your significant other.
I don't know.
Casting agents may be listening, Grace. This is trying to give you a leg up.
Pressure.
I will sign any NDA, any NDA you need me to be in Star Wars.
Yes. For me, obviously, I'm a model professional. I wouldn't tell a single person, not my wife, not my soon-to-be-born child, not a person would know.
You could tell your soon-to-be newborn child. Mm. It's not like the child is really going to tell anyone. Won't have the language, the means to do so for
That's a good point.
For like
okay.
4 years.
So anyone that's making a Star Wars film in the next year or two, let's say realistically, if you cast me, I will only tell my soon-to-be newborn child. And then if it gets out from there, I have a very advanced baby. That's all I can say.
Just like lean into the crib, be like, in this one, R2-D2 gets a sword. You're like, that's right, tell no one.
Well, then you could just feed it like false plot points and like casting choices as well, and just see like
See if my baby's a snitch. Yeah. Dirty grass.
before you tell it like the really important ones.
Yeah.
Who leaked this to TMZ? Yeah. It was you.
Yes. It would be tremendously exciting. If I was in that position, I would not be able to, well, except for an NDA I'd signed.
Oh yeah.
I'm really bad at keeping secrets. When I was trying not to tell people about the baby.
What's your PIN number?
3 Oh no. when we were trying not to tell people about the baby, I was really bad at it in terms of like, because the problem was I was just so excited and happy, and having a baby is very much the same as being cast in Star Wars, I understand, where people were like, yeah, we kind of figured out that might be the case because you were, you know, sort of like levitating around rooms instead of behaving like a normal human being. So just be warned, Kathleen Kennedy, if you are around, I'm a bit of a blabbermouth. So we'll see. So it's time for us to score the film, to give this film a score out of 10. And Grace, it was your first time watching Star Wars Episode 8, The Last Jedi. What score would you give it out of 10?
Ooh. I think I'm going to go solid 6.5 space shuttle parking violations out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, that was a big question that we had whilst watching this, is what are the parking laws on Canto Bight?
It's okay to dislike Star Wars.
Yeah, so a solid 6.5. Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, not outstanding, but...
I don't think it's one that I would... out of the Star Wars films that I've seen so far, it's probably the one I'd be least likely to go back and rewatch.
Okay.
Which is
thus far.
Episode 9's coming. Just saying.
It's the worst reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes of the entire franchise.
Is it really?
Yes.
Worse than Episode 2?
No, Episode 2 is better reviewed than Episode 1. Episode 1 and Episode 9 as bookends are critically the least well-received, which I think is fantastic symmetry of, like, the further inwards to the middle you get, the better Star Wars is.
Cards on the table. What score would you give The Last Jedi out of 10?
Rewatching it, I still enjoyed it, especially for, you know, the same reasons as I did before. If anything, there's one element, like, that I actually... think works better, like the like Poe being like, why don't you just tell us the plan? Mm. She gets out one sentence and he's still like flying off the handle. Mm. So, I mean, yeah, realistically, she could have told him the plan at least a little bit better. Mm. But also the way he was behaving was like, interrupted her a lot.
He was a complete asshole.
Yeah.
It's like, I wouldn't tell you the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I remember being like, yeah, she could just tell him and like resolve a massive amount of conflict. And then like rewatching it, that was actually better than I remembered it.
Mm.
But then also I'm like, this film is funnier than I remembered it, which just makes it feel just like vibe wise different.
Mm.
It's like it's two things happening at the same time.
Yeah.
It's
discordant.
And yeah. And so I'm going to give it, you know, 7 ghost lightsabers out of 10 because there's a lot of good elements to it. And there's a lot of not so great elements to it, but I still overall think it is fun.
Yeah, I think it is a film of moments. The Luke Skywalker brushing his shoulder after the laser fire thing was just like, yeah, that's a fun moment. But equally, I didn't really love Poe taunting General Hux with the yeah, I'll hold thing. It kind of, that didn't feel...
That was kind of Joss Whedon-y.
Yeah, it felt...
Which is very odd.
It felt very Avengers-like, which, admittedly, you know, the Avengers were very popular when these films came out. They still are. But it did just feel like, yeah, we've not really seen that sort of humorous, bantery interplay in Star Wars that much. And we haven't seen it too much since. So I feel like that's another one of those things that Rian Johnson tried so that we could all know whether to do it or not again, kind of thing. And I also love that the captions kept calling him General Hugs as well, not Hux, but Hugs, which is very pleasing.
This is one. I like one of the two films that this is.
It's fair enough. For me, it's a film of moments. Some of the moments are really, really, really good. There are some absolute highlights. I think all the stuff in the throne room with Snoke and Rey and Kylo is right up there with really interesting Star Wars power play dynamics. I think that, yeah, the crate sequence is beautiful. I think it is incredibly well shot. It's almost like Hoth, but better shot in some respects. Mm. And Hoth's not a badly shot sequence. It's just...
Get him, everyone.
Yeah, get off me, internet! But, you know, it's been 30-plus years since they shot Hoth, and now they've got different, you know, techniques and cameras and stuff, and it looks... It's just very striking, and I certainly don't think anything in 7 or 9 was as striking as that sequence on Crait for what it presented visually. Some of it's just plain doesn't work, and that's also okay. It's Star Wars. Get over it. It's fun. Like, it's not the end of the world if a Star Wars film is good or bad. So I'm going to give it 7 roasted porgs out of 10. I love the porgs. They're definitely in the good side of the list for me, but I am curious as to what they taste like.
They probably taste fishy.
I'm thinking like an oily chicken is where I'm at.
Like, I don't think seabirds are tasty. Then again, as a vegetarian, I'm not particularly familiar with what most meat tastes like, to be honest.
But yeah.
So if anyone either in this room or listening wants to skewer a seagull and roast it and tell me if that's good or not, let me know.
I tried turning a seagull or seagull meat into a sausage once, but it didn't go well. It was a turn for the worst. And on that note, we finish the program. David,
this is you're growing in power as soon to become a dad. You're like, my dad jokes will become even more unpalatable.
You try to strike me down, I'll come back with more groans than you can possibly imagine. David and Grace, thank you so much for joining me on this special hiatus breaking episode of the Cinema Catch-Up Club.
Thank you.
Oh, there we go. Most welcome. And for those of you listening at home, thank you for listening in. It's hiatus breaking, which means that the hiatus continues after this. Because by the time this is out, so should the baby. That there should be something that's out as well. So you'll get news and updates on that you know, if I choose to share things about personal life of my family, I will. I'm a blabbermouth. We already established this. But yes, you'll get news and updates on that and about when the program is returning on our Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/CCUC podcast. You can just search for Cinema Catch-Up Club in the search bar there to get news and updates. We have our Patreon, where there is some exclusive content that is going up for patrons only during this hiatus time. For as little as $1 a month, you can get extra goodies and features. Just go to patreon.com/CCUC podcast and subscribe. The easiest way to know when episodes are coming back out is to subscribe and forget all about it until suddenly you see a brand new episode appear in your list. Just search for us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, however you get episodes. But that is all for this week, so until next time, may the Force be with you, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
And also with you.
You have been listening to a Thought Jar Productions podcast. For more information, please visit thoughtjarproductions.com.